From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Hope your brain waves are doing well, fellow conspiracy realist. We are also going to check in with the state of music in a country or a region you haven't heard too much about here in the U.S. We are going to, along the way, mention some other stories that caught our eyes. If you were listening to this and you're currently unhoused, here is hoping that the Supreme Court does not ban sleeping outdoors, which is a thing they're trying to do. Have you heard about this?
No. Would that also include camping?
that's the question, right?
Yeah.
It's like, how would you...
To be in a national park or something, some kind of like government accepted designation.
Yeah. And before the mutated strains of drug resistant bacteria get into the International Space Station or take it over, it's already up there in orbit. We have other stories to share. We want to start with one that may not be appropriate to all audience members. So, we're going to talk about an incredibly disturbing event, self-immolation, that occurred here in the United States shortly after we recorded our previous Strange News and Listener Mail. And if this is something that may not be appropriate for you or the kiddos listening along, absolutely fine. Just fast forward 15 minutes or so, and we'll give you a chance to go. Very well. We begin.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Want to introduce you to a man named Max Azzarello. At the age of 37, Max Azzarello set himself on fire in a park outside of the Lower Manhattan courthouse where the trial of former President Donald Trump continues today. This was a long time in coming, and if you are someone who is on social media, you may have seen a lot of the discourse as this was happening. If you were not on social media and you get your news through maybe broadcast television or the radio, then you may have also heard the live reporting of this self-immolation. Self-immolation is just the word for setting oneself on fire. And this This prompted a conversation immediately about what the motives may have been, right? What could possibly drive someone to injure themselves in this way? Historically, we know that self-immolation in the modern era has often been an act of protest, right? In the Asian theater, as well as, you know, the ostensible launch of the Arab Spring not too long ago. And I think we all read about this case separately by the time we were really digging into a lot of this stuff, this person was still alive. They were grievously injured when they set themselves on fire. They were taken to a hospital after the flames were finally extinguished, and they died as a result of their injuries. What we'd like to do with our time today here is take a look at the trail that Max Azzarello left in the time leading up to his death, because before he set himself on fire, he distributed pamphlets out like around to anyone who would listen. And reportedly, law enforcement was also very quick to pick these pamphlets up. We read his manifesto, right? And he also left videos about the beliefs that propelled him toward this act. I'd like to start with, before you get to the manifesto, excellent piece by the New York Times, written by Michael Wilson, Tracy Tully, and Jan Ransom. A life overtaken by conspiracy theories explodes in flames as the public looks on. And the scary thing is, I think for many of us listening tonight, up until the death of his mother that he had a very close relationship with, Max was an all-around mensch. He was like a good guy. He was educated. He was a supportive friend. He had worked with some political offices, but he was by no means like a partisan of any sort. He was the kind of person that you could talk with, even if you disagreed. And that appeared to begin to change around April 6, 2022, when his mother, Elizabeth, passed away. And I think we've all, like, we're mentioning this off air. We saw some of the videos right before, and I think we've read the manifesto as well, correct?
I have not. I just want to say, though, when I first saw the news story, my immediate assumption was that it was some kind of protest for Trump being on trial, that it was like a hardcore supporter. And I think a lot of people probably thought that until deeper digging was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's... The pamphlet that he was distributing, you can actually still find it.
Right.
Right now, there's a Google Drive where it exists. I guess we could say the name of it. Just bleep this. Dip Secrets of Our Rotten World is the title of it. And it has all kinds of stuff in there, including a section about The Simpsons and how it's brainwashing and evil.
Right. And if you were in the wrong place, that place being Collect Pond Park, right by the courthouse, then you would have been able to snag a physical copy of these. You can also go to his Substack, theponzipapers.com, and read in full his thoughts about this. To give you just some excerpts here, which is right now, you can find it easily, folks. He says, "My name is Max Azzarello. I am an investigative researcher who has set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial in Manhattan." Interesting note, this is not related to the Trump trial itself, which I think is, to your point, Noel, it's something we all thought upon first read just because of the location he chose. But he says the following: "This extreme act of protest is to draw attention to an urgent and important discovery. We are victims of a totalitarian con, and our government, along with many of their allies, is about to hit us with an apocalyptic fascist world coup." And as you read through, Max lays out the sort of point by point of what led him to this belief and what he sees as supporting evidence. And it, to him, the story starts, or one of the big parts of the story begins in March of 2023, when billionaire Peter Thiel starts a bank run on Silicon Valley Bank, which we talked about when that occurred. And as he is investigating this on his own, he begins becoming increasingly convinced that this all dates back to cryptocurrency and to Thiel's venture capital firm Founders Fund. And he lists out the following things that he considers inarguably proven. One, cryptocurrency, he says, is our first planetary multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. He says further that cryptocurrency was expressly created for this purpose by a cabal of rich and powerful people. He says all the bank failures in March of 2023 were intentional. In other words, that someone was purposely collapsing the banks. And he says cryptocurrency is what's keeping this quote-unquote Ponzi scheme afloat. When it goes insolvent, which apparently is designed to do, it will take down half the stock market. It has already created global inflation, and from there goes on. It's very, again, apocalyptic, end of civilization type stuff. He also says COVID was unleashed on the world as a rationalization or something for the public to focus on or a way to enable the Ponzi scheme to continue. Other phrases he uses are things like economic doomsday device made to shatter the world economy. We're all familiar with stories of billionaires getting up to shenanigans, and not all of those stories are untrue. But in this case, Max also argues the U.S. government is fully in on the grift. He name checks Bill Clinton, going back to the 1988 DNC speech where he nominates Dukakis. He talks about The Simpsons, as you had earlier mentioned, Matt. He talks about Rob Lowe getting stitched up. He brings in Epstein. He claims that the entire governance of the U.S. is a secret kleptocracy, with both parties ultimately being run by financial criminals. Which, again, I don't know. Let's stop there. The Simpsons thing, by the way, traces back to Harvard. He thinks people become part of this scheme through Harvard.
Like anyway. The Lampoon? Isn't that the kind of comedy magazine of Harvard?
Yes, but he's specifically talking about people who probably wrote for the Lampoon, sure, and then found their way from Harvard to the Simpsons writing room. And there's
Conan O'Brien, I believe.
27 of them, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like a pop culture fun conspiracy that's been bandied about so long to almost to the point of meaninglessness, where people say, oh, the Simpsons predicted insert thing here. Right.
Yeah. But in his pamphlet, he's saying that The Simpsons as a show basically was programmed us to think we are powerless kind of dum-dums inside this big, you know, dum-dum cogs in this huge machine, and we're powerless to change anything.
Do we really need The Simpsons to feel that way, though?
So let me get to a quote from the manifesto, which, again, I think you should read the pamphlet if you're interested. If you want the in-depth stuff, look at his manifesto where he writes out a lot of this. And he says, here's his quote. He says, if The Simpsons served the interest of organized crime, how would it do so? Well, it offers a dysfunctional family suffering from moral decay, a community incapable of solving its problems, a worker drone who slaves away for an evil billionaire, and cathartic laughs for our poor collective circumstances. And then he starts talking about specific episodes like Marge versus the Monorail, which I think was written by Conan O'Brien,
sure,
primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa the Iconoclast. And he argues that it is pop culture programming. The idea that the elites of the U.S. and maybe the world are telling the public that our eroding collective circumstances are our own fault and we can't do anything about it while they steal the American dream from us. It is, says Max, for lack of a more elegant word, brainwashing. And while this might all sound really crazy, he is writing in a structured way, right? In a coherent way.
Couldn't you apply that kind of thinking to just about any form of satire, though, if you tried hard enough?
Yeah, there's a Rorschach aspect to it, right? Like, what do we interpret, you know? Because Married with Children, if you remember that show, that had a lot of the same stuff, but maybe without the trope of the redemptive kid.
And it's not nearly as clever.
It's not, no. The Simpsons has the benefit of standing on the shoulders of satirical giants. But with this, you know, the issue for me, guys, is that a lot of people, especially in recent years, have felt that there is something more to the story, that they've been left adrift, right? That the institutions and the regimes and morals that are supposed to protect the public have been weaponized or compromised. And, you know, look at the Supreme Court. That's got some real problems that are coming to bear now.
Well, none of these things are patently untrue. It's also not a particularly unique take, I would argue, any of it. You know, it sounds like a person that was triggered into a state of mental decline that kind of snowballed. And I don't mean to be reductive in that way, right. But that's just kind of how it hits me.
He also mentions Walt Disney, Stanley Kubrick
all
with Dr. Strangelove, yeah, George H.W. Bush as the director of the CIA. And his logic, at least from what I understand, you guys tell me if this is incorrect, his logic is that this cabal escalated an existing plan because climate change and resource extraction, the great bill of those crimes, is coming due. And so they knew that they would eventually not be able to sustain the current status quo. And so their plan, in his estimation, was to gobble up all the wealth and resources they could and then pivot to a hellish dystopia, leave everybody else holding the bag of consequences. And again, to your point, Noel, some of the things that he mentions are things that many of us listening tonight might personally agree with, but he's curated these into his own sort of milieu or remix. And with this, I don't know if it brings the awareness that he was hoping for, because the story, the headline people read is man sets himself on fire. And then many of us initially assumed this was meant to be some sort of public protest about the ongoing Trump trials. But to be clear, again, it isn't. And I'm not sure what we take from this. Folks, if you're listening to this and you have ever felt that you were in an unstable place or you were not supported by friends or family, please remember that there are resources available. And Azarbello reminds me a little bit of, you know, how people got weaponized by the QAnon chatter. And the next thing you know, raising an interesting point on a forum leads you into the spiral where months later, you're armed and you're breaking into a pizza place.
Got to wonder, too, someone who hasn't been dipping their toes into these waters for years and years, to whom a lot of these things feel old hat to, if all of a sudden they were presented a lot of this stuff at once, I could see how someone not in the best mental state could be too much for, you know, because it can just be like sensory overload. And I think that happens a lot. And I think that's what caused a lot of people during COVID to go off the deep end a little bit, because they didn't have anything to do but go down these self-perpetuating kind of echo chambery rabbit holes.
And got caught in the feedback loop.
Yeah, guys, look, I don't know about y'all. Personally speaking, I think the reason why I haven't gone down a full-on like meltdown route after learning everything that we've learned on this show is because I've got responsibilities I have to take care of on a daily basis. I can't focus on some of these things as some unified theory, as some like big bad that's happening, and really point to things like this and make pamphlets. It's because I gotta make sure my son's got food. I gotta make sure he gets to school. I gotta make sure he's got clothes. I gotta make sure, you know, we're making episodes so that I can have a house and mow the lawn, and I fill my life up with responsibilities, which is, well, and distractions like video games, like Fallout and all that stuff, and TV shows. I guess here's my worry. I think anyone listening to this right now, any one of us, could be susceptible to this if we had the time, basically, to sit here and ruminate on all of the insane stuff that we've uncovered over the years, which just makes me, you know, it makes me feel terrible for this person. For him, for his family, for anybody that knew him, because he got caught up in loops, like you were saying, Ben. That again, I think we have to individually be cautious of.
Yeah, agreed. And In the case of Azzarello, there were signals. There are almost always signals for the leading up to or preceding these acts. We know that he had been checked into a mental health facility in August of 2023. There is nothing wrong with that, to be clear. That is a good thing to do when it's necessary. He didn't find it very helpful when he left. He reportedly, and this is from the Times article, he approached an autograph in the Casa Monica Hotel over in Cordova Street of St. Augustine, Florida, and he threw a glass of wine at it. The police came over, and he told the police he did that, and they said, okay, well, you know, everybody has a bad night. Again, that is also true.
Yeah, it's also somewhat generous of them, one could argue. You know?
Yeah, anybody has a bad night. But then 2 days later, he is back in front of the very same hotel in his skivvies, in his underwear, ranting through a bullhorn to the public. And then 3 days after that, he vandalizes a sign outside a United Way office. He climbs into the bed of a stranger's truck and starts going through stuff. This has all been a huge sea change for him, because radicalization does occur. And often when you're in the midst of it, of extremism or falling into that feedback loop, to you, it will not, if you are in the bubble does not seem to be a bubble of extremity. You know, you think that you are, or you feel that you are putting the pieces together. You think it's everybody else who's slowly boiling in that pot. And with this, you know, there's much more to the story. Do you guys have something to add before we close this part?
Oh, just something that you, I guess, kind of mentioned in your write-up in our shared document about this. This does feel to me like the kinds of doomsday tropes that we see a lot of times in history and fiction. People wearing like sandwich boards saying the end is nigh, you know, reminds me of like there's a character in Watchmen, you know. And of course, the narrative of Watchmen is that all of those conspiracies are in fact true, and that the people shouting, you know, in the streets are, actually do kind of know what's going on. So. But it does feel like a harbinger in a way, you know, when you hear about this kind of stuff and how maybe it's a perfect storm for people to be self-radicalized in this way. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting phenomenon that I don't quite know how to wrap my head around.
Well said. Also, another aspect of this is that if you are an antagonistic force who seeks to destabilize a given government or power structure, or social structure, I should say, then you can create things that look like independent protests. That does not appear to be the case here. But the question is this a tragic, heartbreaking one-off? To our knowledge, no one else was injured. Is it possibly indicative of a trend, right? What is on the horizon? With that in mind, folks, please take care of yourselves. Take care of your loved ones. We're going to continue digging into this story. We are going to learn more about it as time progresses. In the meantime, before we move to the next piece of strange news, please remember this. If you are having thoughts of self-harm or suicide, you can right now call or text 988 to reach the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline. You can also go to speakingofsuicide.com/resources. For a list of additional resources, you are not alone. Your mental health is worth it. Again, that's 988. We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. We'll return with more strange news.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with a story that still definitely feels like stuff they don't want you to know in a bit of a sinister way, but on the surface, maybe a little bit lighter than the story we just discussed. The Russian Republic of Chechnya has recently announced a ban on music that the way it's being reported in the Western press is that's either too fast or too slow. The Chechen Ministry of Culture released a statement saying, that was translated to say, from now on, all musical, vocal, and choreographic works must correspond to the tempo of 80 to 116 beats per minute. Probably most people understand what BPM is, but anyone that works in production probably understands to a greater degree, and there's an interesting psychology behind it. A lot of modern pop music is about 120 to 122 beats per minute. A lot of hip hop is slower than 80 beats per minute. What kind of falls between 80 and 116 are a lot of house music and techno music and kind of club type music, but also classic rock songs like Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles, which is just ever so slightly too fast for that, including also Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, which is 117. So one BPM too fast. And the reasoning behind this, as far as the Chechen government and their Ministry of Culture is concerned, is to really focus on carrying on and perpetuating the Chechen folk traditions in music and to not borrow from other cultures at all, which is very interesting to kind of couch that in terms of such a mathematical formula, like the idea of like this is the no-go zone for beats per minute, rather than like things like instrumentation or, you know, certain kinds of arrangements or whatever. It just seems rife for failure. But let's right. see. Yeah, I don't know. We could maybe just start from there. There's some other things I want to bring into the conversation, but it immediately hits you as sort of like, you know, a ban on dancing because it's like it goes against religious beliefs. But this is less a religious thing than it is a cultural thing. And it's about preserving and passing on the traditions of Chechen senses of rhythm to future generations. But yet, there's some very interesting kind of contradictions in this that we'll get into in a second, but I don't know. Maybe we'll start from there. Do you guys have any thoughts on banning music of a certain BPM and how it could even be forced?
What could go wrong, right? No, I think we do need to just real quick for anybody listening, because we talked about the problems between Chechnya and Russia
exactly.
earlier.
Thank you, Ben. Perfect.
Yeah, earlier in drugs as weapons. Chechnya's pretty small. It's an autonomous republic in the North Caucasus. So think like southern Russia. And it's to your point about culture, Noel, I'm wondering if Ramzan Kadyrov, the leader of Chechnya. I'm wondering if this is part of a continuing move to shore up nationalism, to say, like, we do have a distinct culture. We are not Russian.
Sure.
We are our own thing.
Except, I mean, I know that Chechnya has waged a couple of wars against Russia in the past, but now I believe they're considered quite the ally. You know, and the person you just mentioned in power there in Chechnya is very close with Putin, and I believe was either installed or, you know, kind of co-signed by Putin.
Yeah, yeah. He's currently a colonel general in the Russian military. I know that and he was basically, Putin was his kingmaker, right? That's who tapped him in. But I'm also thinking, like, okay, in this part of the world, and also in Central Asia, a lot of laws get passed that may seem very odd to outsiders, but we have to understand there's got to be some kind of logic behind it. I mean, if they're trying to ban it, to your first question there, I guess the only really effective ban is trying to shut down importation of stuff, which is almost impossible in the era of streaming music. But then you could say, well, you can't play this at official state functions, right? No more Hotel California.
Except the funny thing about it is there are so many American as apple pie songs that totally fit the bill, like
right,
Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. I mean, how much more American can you get in terms of like importation of culture? I mean, it's just classic, you know, disco, you know, white dudes singing falsetto.
And traditional Chechen music, by the way, kind of slaps.
Oh, absolutely. No, for sure. And I've certainly heard a lot of traditional Chechen music because of the nature of the string sounds and the rhythms, the polyrhythms used in electronic music and samples and like used as like textures and kind of like loops, you know, underlying kind of electronic music. But yeah, like I'm getting a lot of this from this NPR piece, by the way, from April 9th by Rachel Treisman. And she points out that in addition to Staying Alive by the Bee Gees, Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven, which is 82 BPMs, fits the bill. Dancing Queen by ABBA, another very European kind of like fashion forward kind of Western vibe there. And Taylor Swift's 10-minute version of All Too Well, which is 94. I guess my thing is like the whole BPM range seems just problematic in terms of like, how is this actually accomplishing what they're setting out to accomplish? Apparently, even the Russian national anthem in its official recording currently, it is out of this range. It's too slow.
Well, they have until June 1st to rewrite it.
Right. Well, there you go. And I'm sure that would happen. But even like the song in the background of the kind of like press release video that announced this was also didn't fit the bill for this standard. It's really interesting.
I've got one of those silly, very clear pictures in my head of roving groups of military or police personnel that have some kind of device that just measures beats per minute.
They exist, for sure.
It's just walking around and detecting
it. Tap tempo is what it is. They're walking around with just like a metronome and tapping the tempo like a producer would to try to get a tempo for like a track in Ableton. Shut it down.
After that June 1st deadline, though, at least artists who have to rewrite songs in Chechnya from Smithsonian article you sent, Noel, that also links to the original reporting of the Moscow Times, it looks like they will have an opportunity to rewrite their songs if they don't jive with the new band. But if they don't rewrite a song, then they just can't play that song in public. So is it kind of like how some countries will ban smoking in public places, but you can still like smoke at your house? Can you still play, what was it, Here Comes the Sun in your apartment?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, drug laws where it's okay to consume it in your private home, but not out in public, or you can't buy it or whatever the rules might be. One thing to mention too, Ben, that I'm sure you're aware of is Human Rights Watch's view of Chechnya. As recently as 2017 and 2019, they conducted some very deadly purges of folks seen as being part of the LGBTQIA community. There's something about the idea of like banning club music has such a, you know, place in gay culture, right. You know, and in terms of like just the history of it and like the the nature of dancing in clubs is often there are some huge, you know, forces in that world that are part of that culture. And you just got to wonder if there's sort of like a behind the scenes, you know, dog whistle-y thing where they're saying this stuff isn't welcome here anymore. But it's like, they wouldn't have to be this veiled about it though, because they've been so open about their disdain for that kind of culture as well. So you got to wonder what the real motivation is.
Maybe it is a culture war. A culture war mentality, because doesn't this come in the step of, first, they've been terrible to like LGBTQ people for quite some time. There is an active warning for anybody traveling there regarding that. And then I think this was on the heels of a unintentional pun on the heels of new dress code crackdowns to make people dress in accordance with their interpretation of Islamic law.
Guys, can we do a quick demonstration just for anybody that hasn't sat in a studio before, like
Absolutely.
The three of us have, with a BPM, like
sure.
a metronome playing?
Yeah, that's
so
smart.
Here's a quick example of 80 beats per minute. So this would be the minimum number of beats per minute that is allowable under this new rule.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Okay, and
Got
then
it.
Here.
Ballad territory, kind of.
Yeah. Right? And here's 116 beats per minute.
Too fast.
Shut it down.
Shut it down.
Smash the metronome.
No, that's right on the edge. That's allowable.
Well, and I just think the discrepancy too between like 116 and 117. Oh, buddy. Like if anyone's ever futzed over making beats, sure. Again, the psychological effect of like of tempo really does read. But the difference between 116 and 117 is probably something only a really nerdy producer in the weeds is going to. Nope, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
even 79 and 80, right? I mean,
of course,
it's really, really close.
I just wanted to add something that I thought I saw this on a YouTube video, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the creator, pointed out something that I was unaware of. In 1994, the UK passed a law that banned public performances of music, quote, wholly or predominantly characterized by the emission of a succession of repetitive beats, AKA techno. They were trying to crack down on club culture. They were trying to crack down on raves. You know, this is like the high time for raves. And there's a very interesting group called Autechra, who are kind of in this, I don't know, it's sort of an annoying designation, but IDM stands for intelligent dance music. Things like Aphex Twin and Square Pusher, like the beat boops, not just straight up four on the floor, like dancey club music. But Autechra, in response to this law, issued a track called Flutter, in which no two bars ever have the same beat. And it was literally like a protest. And they had some very interesting things to say about it in the, in the literature that came with, I believe it was either a single or something. The track was programmed to have non-repetitive beats and therefore, according to them, can be played at both 45 and 33 RPMs on a turntable under the proposed law.
Which is what we call malicious compliance.
Yes. And then they also went on to advise that any DJs spinning their track to, quote, have a lawyer and a musicologist present at all times to confirm the non-repetitive nature of the music in the event of police harassment.
Fantastic.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing we're talking about with this Chechnya story, where it really, I guess you can measure BPMs more easily than you can how often beats repeat or what qualifies as like repetitive, because that's sort of a little bit subjective. And BPM are an objectively measurable thing. But what if you had a song that changed BPM? That's only 116 for a second, and then it goes down to whatever acceptable rate. Are you doing an average at this point? These cops are going to have some serious math skills.
What if you are considered a political dissident? Because we know Chechnya has a lot of problems with this right now. What better pretext would there be? Now the police can just break into your flat and say, oh, we have to check on the BPM and we found this other stuff. So you're under arrest or executed.
And could it go to the lengths of like book burnings, where it's no longer even legal to possess these? You know, it's a slippery slope. You start by doing it, making it about public performance, but then next thing you know, it's like, no, we're really cracking down and we need, you know, to have this iron grasp over culture, and it's no longer legal to possess these things. Like how long a walk is it from one of those to the other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do you, I don't know. It's definitely part of something larger, I think, a way to further exert control over the region and the public. But I, as you astutely pointed out here, Noel, there are a lot of problems with the idea of an enforcement of this, let alone the conception of this kind of law. And those problems are such that we have to question the motivation. Like the idea of quote unquote preserving culture, that just doesn't, it doesn't have enough sand for me. It doesn't hold water. It feels like it is for something else. Perhaps, as you said, it is a dog whistle, right? Like when racist politicians back in the 1980s and 90s would make such a to-do about quote unquote urban music, right? So now they're just saying BPMs.
Well, weirdly enough, speaking of that bizarre designation in commercial radio, by the way, hip hop in the main, totally acceptable under this right. designation, because I think it's largely like 75 BPMs or faster. But within that range, you know, you don't usually have, except for like maybe like Bombs Over Baghdad by Outkast, mm-hmm. you wouldn't really have a hip hop song that was at the speeds that are on the upper end of that.
That makes it clear. I think we know what we have to do. Gentlemen, it's time to contact the Wu-Tang.
Oh, yeah.
Take them out of the they're in Vegas training right now. I say we deploy them.
Oh, I thought they were chilling in the 36th chamber.
That's you. Are you read on to Operation 36th Chamber?
Absolutely.
They relocated it to the outskirts of Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, now, weird. I don't care for that. In the Sphere, perhaps. So anyway, but I don't know. Interesting story. Interesting example of a very odd move that seems to be a harbinger of things to come, perhaps, much like the unfortunate fellow in your story, Ben. But again, a lot less heavy, but something that seems less heavy on the surface can yield much heavier results down the road, as things tend to kind of snowball with these levels of like trying to control what people can and can't do. Let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with one more piece of strange news.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And And we're back. Guys, I can't wait until 2038.
That rhymed.
The newly elected president of the United States requires that all music that is played within the United States be bluegrass only. There's only bluegrass, and people will have until September to rewrite all of their songs into a bluegrass format. That's going to be exciting.
Bluegrass has got to be on the upper end of that BPM range. It's all pretty quick.
Yeah, but it's representative of American culture somehow.
Yeah, which is interesting because Americana. So much of it. Yeah, because the banjo clearly traces back to an African instrument.
Ah, see?
And a lot of the Chechen instruments that are kind of lute-like or these sort of like, you know, have that sort of timbre to them.
Well, as the first actual facts Homo sapiens, you know what I mean? The origin of humanity, a lot of stuff people are claiming is their own ultimately traces back to, you know, when people started peopling in Africa.
Basically, we're saying this is nuts. All of this stuff is nuts. Well, hey, you know what else is nuts? Everything you've ever thought ever in your whole life or seen or heard happened inside your brain. And let's talk about what happens inside there and whether or not you control the data that your brain generates.
You're reading my mind, Matt. I love
it. I hope so.
This is one of those things, by the way, when I had seen this, I didn't even bother to reach out because I was like, I know one of us. We have to get to this. I'm very excited.
This is it, y'all. 10 years ago, almost today, in April 2014, we released an audio and video series about something that was then known as neuromarketing. If you want to look those up, you can search our YouTube channel at Conspiracy Stuff for, quote, exploiting your reptilian brain for profit, or Neuromarketing and You. That's a real banger. You should check that one out. Only 44,000 people have seen it so far. Neuromarketing, Science, or Science Fiction. Those are all three video and audio episodes you can listen to right now about this thing called neuromarketing that at the time was being pioneered by several private companies that were using fMRI technology and EEG technology to scan the old human brain while that meat-based sensor equipment was interacting with advertisements to basically get a better concept or an understanding of what a consumer's response to advertising is, what they focus on visually, what they remember from the audio, and most importantly, how the ad made that meat brain feel.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
You're saying meat brain made my meat brain sizzle a little bit.
Well, there you go. And since then, y'all, we've been rapidly, unsteadily careening down this old humanity mountain towards full-on Android territory. And now, in 2024, there are companies like Neuralink that we've talked about before, Synchron that we haven't mentioned that much, Precision Neuroscience, several others. They're all developing and actually deploying direct brain-to-computer interfaces, hardware and software. So do we think there's anything we need to be worried about, guys?
There are a lot of things people need to be worried about.
let's not worry about all of them at once, though.
But this, because I think we kind of, I like the word the predictive area of tonight's program. We did make some predictions there. Just the technology is too yummy. The science is too useful and applicable for it not to be used or applied. But we were, I think, pretty forthright when we said we couldn't make a call on the timeline. We just it's like when you know it's going to rain, but you don't know if it's going to rain at 3:37 or just in the afternoon. But we know it was on the way.
Exactly.
It's a range.
It is. Well, and again, this technology 10 years ago was aimed at understanding the brainwave functionality, the thoughts, right,
sure,
that are happening. Now it's moved into understanding, like reading them to the point where they can be used, your thought can be used as an input, as an interface, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fear that is now coursing through think tanks and lobbying groups, and even now state senators and governors here in the United States and parliaments in other countries across the world, particularly in Latin America, the concept is, how do we protect the data that's stored in each one of our meat brains from being exploited, used, sold by companies that are building tech to read those thoughts?
Right, because you have no currently, you know, again, legislation, as we even said back then, and unfortunately, we're always correct with that, legislation is often outpaced by technology. So there is, it's a new theater of what we define as identity and rights. You know, do you have a right to your thoughts?
Couldn't you argue in terms of the whole, you know, technology outpacing legislation that this is pretty forward-thinking legislation for something that's really just on the bleeding edge, that they haven't really even spelled out like what this looks like in terms of, you know, we've got some things like Neuralink and, you know, folks that are using their minds to control very simple things and play, you know, World of Warcraft or whatever it was that the guy did all night. But it does seem for the legislature in Colorado to be thinking about this already, it's kind of smart.
Agreed. So let's jump to the article that we found on Reuters on April 17th, 2024. That is last Wednesday as we're recording this on the 24th. And here's the title: First Law Protecting Consumers' Brainwaves Signed by Colorado Governor. That is Governor Jared Polis, P-O-L-I-S. It's literally to protect brainwaves, which is crazy to say out loud.
As though it were your intellectual property in some way, or like it's got personhood, or what are we talking about here? That's really interesting.
Well, it's data. It's your data. And
literally, it's like the rawest of data.
And it has never before been accessible unless that data was expressed through either words or someone's writing or through music, through, you know, in some way it was expelled from your brain.
It was collected, even if it was collected physically through monitoring by scientists, right? And even then, for quite some time, they would just have a vague understanding of neural activity, but they hadn't reached the point where some research is at this moment, where you can have someone hooked up to the right equipment, they can think something and you can literally see what they are envisioning or get, for lack of a better word, a transcript of their thoughts.
Wasn't there a dream study where people could look at, kind of get a vague, rough estimation visually of what someone was dreaming?
It's all happening now. You combine it with stuff like a modem's ability to sense the number of human beings in a room. You get into like some of the Bluetooth technology and how that has advanced. Get into, you know, peripherals that are used for gaming right now.
Sure. You magic combine, to location tracking.
Dude, as all of that stuff comes together, we are closer and closer and closer to this really crazy place where whatever entity it is, whatever corporation likely it is, will be able to understand your thoughts wherever you are, where you go, how you think, what you think. It's just going to be insane.
And the end goal, right? Predictive ability. Predictive, not just what you're thinking, but what you will think.
Well, and I would say putting the thoughts in on purpose, because that's what ads are, right? Ads are meant to persuade us. In those episodes in 2014, it was all about how to make a more persuasive ad to get someone to not only want to buy something, but to feel as though they need to buy something. So, according to this article from Reuters, written by Brad Brooks, the sponsors of this bill said, quote, it was necessary as, quote, quick advances in neurotechnology make scanning, analyzing, and selling mental data increasingly more possible and profitable. Other people who sponsored the bill, State Representative Kathy Kipp, let's see, State Senator Kevin Priola, P-R-I-O-L-A, and another huge proponent of this bill, and I would say, doesn't say this in the article, but likely one of the entities that really helped write this bill is a group called the Neuro Rights Foundation. It's a nonprofit that promotes the ethical development of neurotechnology.
Right out of Fallout, guys.
I know.
I mean, can you imagine getting your brain skimmed? You know, like we're worried about like long range credit card skimmers or like RFID tag readers. Could you imagine if this stuff, you know, advanced so far that walking around, someone could shoot something at your head and pull ideas out or pull your personal, you know, passwords or whatever? Like, I know it sounds pie in the sky now, but the way this stuff goes, it's exponential, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it's that far of a walk. Honestly, there is one good thing though, just in larger context, it reminds me of like that TikTok ban that keeps getting discussed instead of data protection laws. This is a cool way to get in front of some things. This might actually set whatever the retroactive version of a precedent is in jurisprudence. If it works, you could say, well, if we're protecting thoughts, let's protect these other things too. It's a bit Pollyanna, but just want to speak it out loud into the ether. So anybody skimming thoughts will be like, hopefully thinking, hey, that's a good idea. And then right there, Congress folk.
Just don't think about Mr. Stay Puft. You know, I'm sorry. I always, whenever I think about like clearing your head, I think about that scene in Ghostbusters where, you know, whatever they think of is what's the form that the traveler is going to take. And of course, the one thought that pops into whoever it was, whatever character's head, was the cuddly Mr. Stay Puft.
Oh, yeah. I think that was Dan Aykroyd's character.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. Yeah. So, guys, for anybody who's listening to this and is still feeling skeptical, this is Reuters writing. Just listen to this. We kind of already said it at the top. Quote, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration last year, the FDA, approved human studies for Neuralink's brain implants, which, as we just said, had previously been tested on animals and is now being tested on humans, and it appears to be functioning. Earlier this month, in April 2024, the CEO of another company, Synchron, S-Y-N-C-H-R-O-N, which is, I guess, a rival to Neuralink, they talked to Reuters and they said the company is preparing to recruit patients for their large-scale clinical trials that they're looking for commercial approval for its brain interface, brain-to-computer interface system. And those are literally two companies out of dozens across the world that are developing this tech right now and have been for a while.
And not all of those companies labor under the same regulations of research that the U.S. applies. So it's, I mean, yeah, I think you're onto something. I think we're onto something in 2014 going through, how did we get to that? It was the obsession with TCDS maybe that led into that. But yeah, man, it's on the way. There is a group of positive cases for this, you know, being able to interact directly with neural activity in, say, comatose patients or people who are physically unresponsive. That's one of the cases that could be a positive, but given the profit motives that are clearly apparent here, we can't say that no one is going to use this in a nefarious and disturbing way.
Well, it feels like the kind of tech or the thinking behind the whole trope of wearing a tinfoil hat or some sort of implement that guards your brain from being infiltrated, you know, penetrated remotely. Those tropes exist for a reason. I'm not saying, you know, that's ever been the case. I just feel like this is now the time in history where we are closer to that reality than ever before. You know, and this is something, what would that look like if all of a sudden this technology is cracked so wide open? Of course, it ends up in the commercial sector first, but then people figure out how to jailbreak it. And then people figure out how to build devices where they can do it themselves, you know, with, again, nefarious purposes. Of course, it would be guarded at first, but then we always see that kind of tech trickle down into like hobbyists and folks that are doing this and maybe even making improvements. You know, it's, I don't know. It's wild.
It is wild, and laws are never going to protect anybody from a bad actor that doesn't give a crap about laws, right? If somebody is coming through and, let's say, illegally scanning brains, even though there are laws against that kind of action. But thankfully, if you're worried about a corporation, let's say, or company that is trying to sell products or maybe even surreptitiously do some brain scanning at some point in the airport in the future, the best places to go right now, as of today's recording, are Colorado, because they're putting legislation forward, and who'd have thought, Chile. If you want to head down to Chile, their Supreme Court just issued a unanimous decision ordering a company there that was doing some brain scanning stuff called Emotiv, E-M-O-T-I-V, to delete all the data that it had collected on one of the senators there in Chile, Guido Girardi, and like they made them get rid of that information. The company complied. They shut down for a moment and they restarted just basically with these new rules. But it's the first time that I guess a Supreme Court or a major court of any kind said, hey, let's make a ruling on brain scanning in particular.
I would think, too, that for medical purposes, this stuff would be covered under like HIPAA regulations where, you know, all of your personal private medical data is protected.
If it's in a hospital or medical setting.
Mm. Right. And this is also, we got to thank the Neuro Rights Foundation. Didn't they work with Chile on that decision?
Oh, they did. But right. Again, look, I want to big up the Neuro Rights Foundation, which you can find at Neuro, N-E-U-R-O, rightsfoundation.org. You can check them out. They're very interesting. They made a documentary with Werner Herzog, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's all about reading thoughts and stuff. What is it called? Theater of Thought. That is the name of it. You can watch
I don't know that one. It's cool.
It appears to be brand new. You can watch a trailer on YouTube right now, and it's got Werner doing his, you know, the mind.
The
and
brain.
It's amazing.
The mind is a terrible thing to taste.
No. But yes, that is in there. And I think they're good. It's one of those things that I haven't had enough time to go through and click on the our
members
people,
of the board.
Board of directors right. yet.
I knew there was going to be a butt. With, I want to big up these guys.
But again,
there's always thing you have to do
the potential. No, there's always the potential for ulterior motives, of course.
On the surface, it appears like, what is that, Electronic Frontier Foundation?
Yeah.
Where it appears to be, it's an organization that appears to be doing really good work. We just don't know everything yet. But yeah, I think this is worth maybe another full episode on this stuff, guys. We may need to give it a little bit more time if new stuff comes out. But I didn't know how many companies are trying to do this right now.
I mean, remember last week we were talking about like Genesis, like the mini livers. This is another form of biotech, right? We're getting to that stage. And I'd like to also, it's synchronicity, because I was also looking back at earlier research from 2014. And I feel like there are a lot of fascinating things here that aren't getting mentioned. Like, how does this help the push for non-human personhood, right? When you can directly communicate. What's happening is we're building telepathy. We as a civilization are building telepathy. Are humans ready for it? I'm going to say it's, you know, sometimes the only way to swim is to jump in.
Bro, humans can barely handle the internet. I mean,
they can't.
This is next level from that. You know, it's just...
And we've
no,
got some people, we can't got some people listening tonight who are experts in related fields. Be cool to hear from them.
Neuroscientists.
Let us know. Yes.
Let us know. Also, let us know if we can finally get the tech from that movie Up, where I can talk to my dogs and hear them say things like, I have only just met you, but I love you.
You know that's how he feels.
Get a cast speak with animals.
I want that. Well, hey, that's all for me, guys.
Fascinating one, man.
All fascinating, all important. And speaking of important, you are the most important part of the show, folks. We would love to hear from you. We pass the torch, be yours to hold it high. And shout out to anybody who got that weird poetry reference. We try to be easy to find online.
Did you learn that from the new Taylor Swift album, Ben? I'm joking.
It's Flanders Field. I spoiled it.
No, it's just funny how everyone's like, oh my God, who is this Patti Smith that Taylor Swift's talking about? I must discover her. And Dylan Thomas, et cetera. But no, you can discover us on the internet by reaching out to us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, on YouTube, where we've got video content rolling out every single week, and on X, FKA Twitter, on Instagram and TikTok, where Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Do you like to call people? Call us and put this number in your contact list. 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know in that message if we can use your message and your voice on the air. And if you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the folks who read every email we get. There is a spoiler. This is why I should always listen to the end of the episodes, folks. We have a prediction that recently got confirmed. We were correct. You guys remember a while back when robot dogs became a thing and people were looking at all the DARPA videos and saying, oh, these are for peaceful purposes. I had said immediately, I was like, the first thing that's going to happen is eventually someone is going to throw a weapon on it. Well, get this. If for $9,420, you too, civilian, can buy a flame-throwing robot dog.
What
the
a world.
The Terminator.
Why wouldn't you? Oh, I didn't know that part.
The great. Terminator. So let us know about these questions and more. Let us know if you have a new Robo-Fido that literally spits fire. And you can do all of that and more at our email address, where we are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.